Good morning. Welcome to the roundtable and to our panel discussion this morning for this Monday, the 3rd of August. Very nice to have you with us. A delight, actually. Hope you all had a lovely weekend. Certainly beautiful weather for weekend activities, and hopefully you enjoyed them. We welcome you to the program this morning. Let me introduce the panel, and then I'll invite you to join us and let you know how you can be a part of the fun. I'm getting used to that. There's a padding now. This is very.
Are you getting organized?
No, I was noticing that there's this stuff. No, I'm organized. All right. We welcome WAMC's Alan Chartok to the program. Good morning, Alan.
Hello. I hope everybody can see me on the web this morning because I disappeared on Friday. I shrunk. And I wasn't here.
And now you have. They can see you this morning.
Maybe, but I'm still short.
I'm sure the camera has been repaired and all is well. Essayist, author, editor, and activist Barbara Smith is with us, and it's always a delight when she's here. Thank you very much, Barbara.
Hi, Joe.
Thank you. And also Mike Spain is with us. He is the associate editor of the Times Union and our...
A frequent guest.
Yes, a frequent guest of the roundtable, and we're
regular and irregular.
We want to.
You got it.
We just want to make mention of two things. We're not going to have a panel tomorrow. We're not going to have a panel on Wednesday because we are on the road for two straight days. Our bags are packed. We're ready to go.
We're on the road again.
That's right. We're going to Tanglewood tomorrow. We're broadcasting from the great porch, press porch at Tanglewood tomorrow.
Yeah.
And we'll be there. And then on Wednesday, we'll be at the Saratoga Performing Arts Center.
That's right. SPAC
is back. And then Thursday, we'll be back here. That's our schedule. Okay. Let us go to...
But you'll always be on the air to the listener.
Of course.
That's right.
Yes, just not this particular configuration. We want to invite you to be a part of the program, Roundtable at WAMC.org, Roundtable at WAMC.org. We have a lot of interesting issues to talk about. Let us begin with the one that was a big article in the New York Times yesterday and is starting to... has been confirmed and is getting quite a bit of play, and that is that Joe Biden seems to be taking a new look at a presidential run. There was, of course, very early in the race, an assumption that he would at least flirt with the idea, and then it was sort of roundly thought that he would not. If then after the death of his son...
Beloved son.
There seems to be, and knowing his son's interest in him running, and the thought that... And let's not, you know, we'll talk about the obvious here, too, which is that with Hillary not doing quite as well as many had imagined or hoped that she would, that instead Joe Biden is once again thinking about taking a look at a presidential run.
Well, if you're looking at me, you are looking at me.
I am.
Okay.
We have it up.
So here's
now that
what,
I can see you.
Here's what I said a while back, about a week or so ago, that I thought Joe Biden would be in a position to step in for Hillary if she self-destructed. No sooner do I say that than Joe Biden stands up at the LaGuardia Airport christening and announces that Andrew Cuomo is the best governor in the United States. Now, this has to really resurrect Cuomo's image to some degree because, you know, every time his father, Mario, acted as if he was going to run for president, his ratings went up. So if somebody's on the rise, I hear a lot of people have been saying, well, what would Andrew do? If he runs for a third term, he might not win. But this is the perfect place for him. If he runs for vice president, Now, people out there are shaking their hands and say, what, are you crazy? No, but here's Joe Biden, who said he's the best governor in the United States. That's got to mean something.
But isn't that when you go and say, this is the best falafel I've ever had? You know, you're just being nice to your host.
But do you tick off all the other falafel purveyors in the world?
Let me ask you, Alan. Who comes to mind as a governor that's better than Andrew Cuomo?
I don't know. I know that Cuomo has been having a real difficult time. His numbers keep going down. Mm-hmm. People see him as, you know, as not their cup of tea. But this will change it, in my opinion. If people think that he might be the vice president of the United States, it can only help him. Now, Joe Biden has a habit of not of saying the wrong thing, of stepping into muck, and people know that. And you know, he doesn't think things through, but he's an incredibly sympathetic person. He did lose his son. He lost his earlier family in an automobile accident. And he's, you know, I don't know what that was, but it was something. So he's, I think, as Hillary's numbers go, her negatives keep going up and up and up. People really, a lot of people don't like her. So you're going to see a lot of people voting for Bernie Sanders as a protest. If Biden puts himself in there, then I think, you know, it's going to be a horse race.
Well, I guess what I'd like to just bring up is this issue of balancing the ticket. If Cuomo or any other white male is the running mate, and it's
from the Northeast.
Yeah. That I don't know what their thinking is about the Obama legacy or the people. Mm-hmm. I watched, you know, all this coverage about this story yesterday, and they were talking about how there are people who just want there to be a woman president.
Mm.
And
right, this is the opportunity.
Yeah. And, mm-hmm. Well, but what I'm saying is that if it turns out to be a Biden, you know, nominee,
sure.
Who would he pick for a vice president to balance the ticket?
Yeah, like Kirsten Gillibrand.
Well, that's a very interesting proposal that you've...
I'm not making a proposal. I'm just saying if I'm him and I'm sitting there, I'm trying to think of... And we all know that she's primed for bigger things, that she's interested in bigger things.
And what's bigger than being a U.S. senator from New York?
Vice president.
Right.
Just a slight clarification, Alan. At the event in Rochester, the old Eastman Kodak building, Biden singled out Governor Andrew Cuomo for praise, calling him just about the best governor in the United States.
Yes, Jerry Brown would be the best governor, actually. Yeah, just California.
Just about.
That's fact
checking.
Yeah. Oh, good, Joe.
But he did go on to LaGuardia and may have said what you said.
Yeah, that's what I think. I think it was at the LaGuardia thing that he
said. Oh, so they spent the day together doing
got elevated
things.
In that short flight.
But who knows?
Down.
I mean, you know, a little this, a little that. So I think that the Biden thing looks very interesting. He's run several times, several being more than two, or two or more, and he hasn't gotten to first base.
One of the strengths that a Biden candidacy could bring is they could argue that he has respect on the Hill and that he can get something done in Congress. Because any time Obama's gotten anything through Congress, it's, well, not any time, but many big initiatives have been because Biden has gone to the Hill and gone one-to-one to the members of both sides of the aisle, and he has credibility there, and that could be one of his strengths as he makes the case. But is it too late to build? I mean, his son Beau, who passed away earlier this year, had started a you know, sort of a pre-campaign fundraising effort for him before he was diagnosed with a brain tumor and brain cancer, and then it just abruptly stopped. But could they pick that back up, and could they build the campaign infrastructure that is necessary at this late date to go up against Hillary, who's raised millions? It's just the PAC money, the numbers that came out over the weekend. I mean, she's just way
huge.
Out there.
Huge.
Yeah, huge.
On the other hand, you know, in the end, no matter how much money people give and the rest of it, in the end, if people don't like her enough, that could be a negative. Barbara says quite right. I want to see a woman president. But
no, that's not what I said at all.
People want.
I was describing other people's points of view.
People, I see.
Yes, yeah. There are people who want to see a woman president.
You were saying other people.
Yeah, right. Yeah.
I mean, that's the narrative that this is our one shot to get a woman as president, and it'll be a long time before it emerges again.
Well, yeah. Barbara, do you want to see a woman president?
Absolutely, I do. Okay. I'm not sure if Hillary Clinton is the woman I am so excited to see. That's my issue.
Got anybody else in mind?
Oh, no, not in this cycle, certainly.
Okay. All right.
We did mention one name of a future contender.
Kirsten Gillibrand.
Senator Gillibrand.
Mm-hmm. What about as this story was making the rounds over the weekend, the question that sort of lingers in the background until all of the other subjects are brought up, and that is his age. 72 years of age.
Ronald Reagan was younger when he ran for president, I believe.
Yes.
Wasn't he? Yeah.
And while he has had health issues in the past, they have seemed to be, certainly he has been a very vibrant vice president over the last 6-7 years. And so we look at this as a possibility, and I don't know, is that an issue? Especially if you're running against someone who is much younger.
Well, that's true. As a 74-year-old, I'm delighted with her age. In the same way, Barbara might want to, you know.
Oh, with Joe Biden's age, yeah.
Joe Biden's age, a woman president. The older I get, the more I want older people, you know, positions of responsibility.
So you like the way China
does it.
So
nobody can say I'm too old. You know what I mean?
Usually they're like about 80 by the time they take over in China, isn't that right?
Well, or at the Vatican.
Oh, the Vatican, right. Although this Pope was younger, a little younger. He was 72, wasn't he?
And it's interesting because Hillary Clinton has been, his age has been an issue even there, and she's only 67.
Right.
That issue about the ground game, though, as a candidate, that's the part that can be really hard to put together. How do you put together a really effective nationwide organization in every county and every ED? Do you see what I'm saying?
And if it is a, quote, draft Biden movement, Alan, has there been a draft movement that has been effective and successful?
I haven't seen a draft movement.
In the 20th century?
You know, Mario used to play the draft card all the time.
Right.
He would hold out and hold out. You know,
in 88, there were people hoping Michael Dukakis would step aside so they could bring in at the last minute Mario Cuomo to rescue the party against George Herbert Walker Bush. Never happened, of course.
Yeah, no, the drafts, though, they worked in the old days, when the party really, when the bosses got together at the convention, they would see, well, we're going to lose unless we can do something here. And then you had more potential for draft than you do now.
Do you think, just because I'm curious about this, do you think the president has had anything to say to Joe Biden about this issue?
I think this president loves Joe Biden.
Yes.
I think it's genuine. I agree.
He loves Joe
Biden.
They
seem to be very, very close.
Yeah. And, so it would be pure speculation to think that these two guys who spend an enormous amount of time together, who talk to each other, haven't mentioned this, you know what I mean?
That it's come up.
Yeah, well, you know, I think despite all of the precautions, all of the warnings that Mike and Barbara, you know, have suggested about coming in late with less money and less field operation and all the rest.
At age 72.
At age 72, I do think he's liked by a lot of people. The real question is, would he screw it up like he has screwed up other presidential runs?
Good question.
That is a question.
He has gaffes. He's made a few gaffes in his, in
well,
his career.
The plagiarism thing.
The plagiarism was the first was the first thing that got him out of the
out of one of the races.
Very early on.
Right. And there were other something to do with that. His law school at Syracuse, the plagiarism. Okay, that was involving that. He's just made comments that have been a little bit awkward.
Unlike Donald Trump,
who's been consistently awkward.
But it's interesting. People like it.
They love it.
Anyway, Joe, we've had some people.
Can I take a break and then come back?
Of course you could.
All right, let's do that and then make everybody happy, and then we'll come back and read letters. Roundtable at WAMC.org. We'll be right back.
Support comes from Washington County Tourism, celebrating the arts throughout Washington County, including theater classes, galleries, musicals, cabarets, opera, and artist discussions. WashingtonNYCounty.com. Albany Marriott with 359 guest rooms, special event and meeting space with internet access, the Market Restaurant and Martini Lounge, and airport transportation. Facebook, Twitter, or AlbanyMarriott.com. And from the Madison Theater, Albany, New York, showing classic and second-run movies, serving organic popcorn, now open the Madison Theater Performing Arts Center with live music, themadisontheater.com.
Good morning. Welcome back to the Roundtable. And we do have letters before we go to BBC News, and we go over to Alan for those.
Okay. Jorley says, I am 25 years old, a Latina woman who would love to see a woman president, but I will be voting for Bernie Sanders. I like Hillary, but I love Bernie. Okay. And then Jay says, if Biden runs, he loses. He spent his career carrying water for the insurance and credit card industries, two businesses that most Americans have intimate and negative feelings about. The Democrats should go with Al Gore. Yeah, right. Okay. And Tom says, if you were in politics, you might want to be a senator instead of vice president. More power, unless you know something the rest of us don't. And then Robert says, panel, Hillary should be very worried about Biden making a run. He has vast experience, and despite being pilloried for minor verbal gaffes, he was right about Iraq and courage and his support for gay marriage. And add to who's a better governor than Cuomo, how about Kasich and Jerry Brown? We did one from Tom, one to a customer, and... Okay, I think that's what I see. Do you see anything else, Joe?
No, I think that is it. Okay, so when you think, given what Mike was talking about earlier about the timing of this and bringing it together, we assume that if Biden is going to make a run, that he would have to get into it fairly quickly, right?
Yes. I think they would have to get into it fairly quickly.
We'd assume that announcement would be...
By September is what they're saying. September, right. That's when a decision would be made. So he'll think about it over the long holiday weekend, Labor Day weekend. So it'll give it a little bit of time to see whether this is real or whether this is just a surge.
Just fun.
Yeah, fun. Right, exactly.
And how close do you think he's watching Hillary's poll numbers?
Oh,
I think that's his bedtime reading, probably.
Exactly.
We had another letter, Joe and Mike and Barbara. Wants to know if the Schumers, Amy Schumer and Chuck Schumer, are related.
Distant cousins.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I've heard they are.
Yeah, from her father's, distant cousin to her father. Mm.
Okay. Well, that's what
they're appearing
together
in New York. Today. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. All right, which I believe is on gun access, I think. So let us take a break. We'll come back and talk about more issues. We welcome your comments, roundtable@wamc.org, roundtable@wamc.org. We'll be back after this short break. Good morning. Welcome back to the roundtable and to our panel discussion this morning. Very nice to have you with us. And we have Alan Chartok here and Barbara Smith and Mike Spain. And we welcome your letters as well. Roundtable@wamc.org. Roundtable@wamc.org. So I just want to talk about two things regarding we want to finish up with the presidential campaign. And one of the interesting stories, Alan sent this one this morning, this is Marist College is suspending presidential polling ahead of the Fox debate, which is on Thursday. And they've suspended it on primary voter choices out of concern that public polls are being misrepresented to determine who will be selected after next week's Republican presidential debate. Meaning you have to poll high to get into the debate, sure. so they're suspending their polls so they don't have that influence.
Well, God bless Lee Marengoff and Barbara Cavallo. These are people who are very thoughtful, and they're doing it, and I think they're right to say this. This is not a precise election. We have seen many times where those numbers don't turn out to be right.
What a thoughtful analysis of what a poll is and using this to make a statement so that people don't think this is an election and these are the people. Polls are, Lee Marengoff understands it so well, and to suspend polling is an assertion that polls are just polls and elections are elections.
I agree with that, and good for them, because the fact if they do a poll, it's going to be looked at, they know it's going to be looked at, and they avoid the temptation, and they say, no, this just isn't right, and we're not going to do it.
But there's plenty of other polls out there.
Well, that's right.
Today, the NBC Wall Street Journal poll has Donald Trump at 19%, Scott Walker at 15%, and Jeb Bush at 14%, and Ben Carson at 10%.
I don't understand that one, but he's obviously, Americans like their brain surgeons.
Yeah, I guess so. One analysis I heard, which I'll repeat, is that, you know, when you take Trump at 19 and you take Ben Carson at 10 and then you take Ted Cruz, who really, even though he's a senator, he's really an outsider wanting to tear down the system. I mean, that's close to 40% of the people are backing sort of insurgent type candidates, people who want to flip the way things are. And that's an interesting analysis.
May I ask, though, are they suspending the poll because they don't want to have impact on the debate choice, or what is it, something else?
No, I think it's first. I think it's the first, what you just said.
On the debate choice. Meaning you have to get a certain amount to get into the debate. They don't want that responsibility.
I see. That's what I thought you meant.
Their poll is being used, yes.
Yeah. Right. But from what you were saying, Alan, I thought you were, and both of you, Mike and Alan, I thought you were saying something about people thinking that the poll is the election.
That was my own thoughts that polls are different, that
they
change from day to day.
No.
Yeah. No political scientist has made that assertion.
No. I just think it's a matter of principle.
Well,
and that they've made the principal choice here.
According to the NBC poll, Chris Christie, Rick Perry, and John Kasich are
fighting
all
it out for 10th place.
Fighting it out to be the last guy on the stage.
Yeah.
So
that's amazing.
Won't be a contributor to that.
Can you imagine Rick Perry and Chris Christie, whose names have been floated around for years now, and that they're fighting so that they're half a percent or that 1% gets them into the poll. It's unbelievable.
Yeah, it really is. But it shows you anything can happen. And Ben Carson being at 10%, I mean, that's again, you know, he's little known. Perhaps it's the least you know about somebody.
That certainly was the case with Barack Obama.
Sure.
Nobody knew who he was. Everybody projected into him the values that they had because nobody knew who he was.
He didn't run in the last cycle either, did he?
Ben Carson, no.
Okay.
That's interesting.
And then finally, over the weekend, Donald Trump fired a campaign advisor after a racially charged Facebook post under his name emerged last week. His campaign manager made the announcement, reached out to a New York Times reporter on Sunday to reveal the news. The Business Insider reported the post of a man by the name of Sam Nunberg, who was a member of the Trump campaign, had made disparaging remarks against Reverend Al Sharpton's daughter using a racial slur. Mr. Nunberg told the Business Insider that he didn't recall writing the posts, and finally, after some squawking on social media, the decision was made to can the guy.
And he's been canned before. He's a Trump loyalist. He's been around for a while, and they have fired him before for being exactly this, you know, sort of the attack dog. You put it out there. If it doesn't go well, you fire him.
Yeah, that's an interesting strategy. Let them go as far as they can and do the damage, and then distance yourself from them.
If you have to.
It's a clever... Well, you know, the interesting thing to me about this, having nothing to do with the campaign, is that this was a Facebook post from 2007. That's 8 years ago. You know, just reminding everybody that
Absolutely.
What they say in social media is there to stay.
No, it's never dead. That's right. That's quite right.
What's up with Donald Trump and the baseball caps?
I think it's to take away the
from
discussion.
The hair?
Yes, don't you? He might get sunburn, you know. I mean, light skin people get sunburn
you're
on top
so
of their
nice,
head.
Mike.
I'm a big fan of baseball.
You know, during the Reagan administration, that was one of the recommendations to combat, the global warming and the effects of the sun was to wear a hat.
Mm-hmm. All righty then.
Can you use your
hat as a flotation device too? My goodness.
Absolutely.
You were going to say something though about the hats.
No, I just wear a baseball cap, a WMC baseball cap.
Yeah, but so you can pull it off.
He's sort of my identity.
Problems.
It doesn't. It works for you, Alan, I have to say, but I don't think it works for Trump. I mean,
no,
he
doesn't look like a baseball cap kind of guy, does he?
Yeah.
A style wonk, but it just looks weird. It looks gigantic.
Yeah, well, the Mets
sit over a lot.
Well, the Mets are in first place.
Yeah, that's
right. And they're tied for first place.
Yeah, but they don't. These
they all wear hats.
Yeah, well, okay, is that the connection? Because he's not wearing a New York baseball cap. He has these weird phrases that
like
that
make America strong again and slogans like that.
Yeah. All right. Well, there we go. Let's move on to. We only have 5 minutes before our news break, so let's just work on this story, which is Mike's story, which I think is fascinating. Of course, Saratoga is doing whatever they can to get the Triple Crown winner American Pharoah to the race course. So over the weekend, there was the Haskell race at Monmouth, which is the race that ultimately American Pharoah went to instead of a race at Saratoga. And now the question, since he won that race, is he going to come to Saratoga? And then Naira is saying, oh, is this not bribery? How does this not bribery?
And New York's horsemen support Naira in this. The New York Racing Association is up the ante. Ordinarily, the Traverse Stakes, which is on August 29th, right at the end of this month, it would be $1.25 million, the purse would be, and that would be shared mostly from the winner and then the next two horses, you know, to place and show. And then over the weekend, they announced they were going to jump that up to $1.6 million only if American Pharoah is in the contest.
I need to say something very quickly.
Yes, go right ahead.
Joe and I regularly receive a message from a woman who thinks that we're cowardly because we don't say that horse racing is a bad thing. In other words, there are those people who think
your opportunity
horses. Yes, and so I thought I would say that because these letters are ringing with sarcasm and anger. So I wanted to say yes. I don't like it either. I don't like the idea of putting those horses out there in the heat and running.
Evidently enough, people do. Thoroughbred racing at Saratoga is a big lift to the region's economy. It adds about $237 million a year, and that's according to the Saratoga County Industrial Development Agency.
Well, but the Romans felt that way about the gladiators.
Yes.
They put them out there.
Not defending it, but it is a big part of the region's economy, and bringing American Pharoah, who's this monster of a horse who seems unbeatable here to beat somebody or be beaten. Secretariat, I believe, was that the one that was
yes.
famously beat by Onion back in 1972?
At Saratoga, following
yes, at
the
Saratoga.
Triple Crown.
So why would you do that? Number one, the brand that you have, and you have this horse doing his duty, his filial duty, right? And therefore, it's got to be close to $1 million every time the horse does that.
I don't think that's being done yet, right?
Not yet. It will be done.
Yes, it will be done.
It will be done. And therefore, would you risk breaking a leg or doing some, or even as you just said, Mike, losing, which decreases the brand?
Well, it certainly didn't hurt Secretariat any, but I don't know.
Losing didn't.
Yeah, no, right. I just thought it was interesting that all of this money was being put into the pot. Philadelphia apparently is doing the exact same thing to try to get the horse
upping
there in
the
September.
Ante? Is that
yes,
right?
Yes.
Oh, how about that?
I'm against horse racing.
Okay.
Well, I'm glad we have that clarified. It's good.
Or okay, chicken racing or dog racing.
We'll add that to the
How about track and field?
The record.
Oh, yeah. That's an interesting one, Mike. I've got to ponder that one. Okay. At least we're dealing with people who can articulate for themselves whether they want to be running or not.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
We will take a break. We'll be back after the short.
Support comes from the Tang Teaching Museum and Dark Gallery at Skidmore College, presenting Upbeat on the Roof, a series of concerts performed every Friday evening in August at 7 p.m. Skidmore.edu/Tang for information. Noble Home, Shelburne Falls, Massachusetts, custom-designed panelized house kits featuring eco-friendly passive and solar design elements, noble-home.net. And from the ADK Cafe, a delicious kitchen in Keene, New York, serving home-cooked breakfast, lunch, and dinner every day. theadkcafe.com.
We'll be right back.
Good morning. Welcome back to the Roundtable and to our discussion this morning. Very nice to have you with us. Roundtable at WAMC.org. Roundtable at WAMC.org. Interesting article in the Washington Post over the weekend that was entitled How Black People Can Emotionally Protect Themselves in the Age of Black Lives Matter. This has come up in two fronts. One is just this overall with the increase in awareness and concern over police shootings, certainly with the Sandra Bland case. That is one that has brought it up. And the other one, which I saw a lot on social media, which I'm sure you all did as well, is that saying, I wish people got as excited and upset and outraged about what was happening in the streets of our cities as they did over the killing of Cecil the Lion. Both, I thought, were interesting points. The Post article talks about how black people can emotionally protect themselves in the age of Black Lives Matter, and this idea of what to do when you feel overwhelmed by more police shootings.
Well, I was really glad that this is one of our potential stories to discuss, because it's absolutely true. It's demoralizing to live with that sense of just constant tragedy and trauma. And people who are involved in these professions, black social workers, therapists, etc., for quite a while now have begun to recognize that living in communities where there is a disproportionate amount of violence, being connected to people who are experiencing gun violence and other kinds of violence that leads to death has a really profound impact that we don't even know. Sometimes these individuals talk about how we're all living with post-traumatic stress disorder, but it's undiagnosed. People point out how when there is a killing of a teenager and he or she is a high school student, that the students at the schools that these children attend don't necessarily get the kind of bereavement services. And, you know, we acknowledge that something really awful has happened, so we're going to suspend classes and make sure you have all the emotional support that you need. I've experienced that myself around young people dealing with the trauma of the one-on-one killings, not necessarily police violence, but I've experienced it myself. I've seen it myself personally. It's very, very upsetting.
Let me just ask about, because there's one line in here, but for many black people, it can feel isolating when non-black friends seem to remain silent on these issues, too.
Well, a few months ago, after I think it was the killing of the person in North Charleston.
Yes. The video captured the policeman just shooting the guy as he was running.
Right. Mm-hmm. And I was with a group of people who I'd never met previously. And one of them said to me, how are you managing? How are you doing? And I had my level of respect for that person and just like, wow, I can't believe that she took the risk of saying something about what was so much on my mind. She knew without ever having met me before. She actually extended herself toward me to say, how are you dealing with all this? Because it is really rampant now because of the cameras. We who live in the community always knew that these incidents were happening, but now everybody knows because it's being recorded.
Yeah, after the last case in Cincinnati, where the dash cam caught the officer just shooting the guy, evidently, I mean, that's the way it appeared and went all over the internet. It just makes you wonder, what about all the deaths of black people at the hands of police officers where there were not cameras, unarmed black people? And it's just the cops' word against the individuals who died, or was shot, or the people that saw it. You know, it just makes you now question it, and you just don't know. And maybe we've been overlooking the facts. And now that we do have dash cams and body cams, et cetera, they will ultimately exonerate people. You know, they'll show both sides of it, and people will have more information, and hopefully, you know, that's what you really hope when you're in the media business, that you present people with enough information and they'll make the right decision and they'll understand things. But it just seems overwhelming now that we're just hearing about all this because of technology. And what was it like before the technology?
You know, you're both right. Absolutely. There's no question about that view of racism and what we see when police get out of hand and shoot people of color. But I'm also thinking about the other kind of racism, which is when people in less affluent communities are subjected to not the same level of protection as those are. So you read every day some guy walks into a party and shoots people's legs off or goes into a place, and the New York City Police Department, for example, has been putting people, officers, into places they know are going to potentially be disruptive. But it gets so complicated because you're talking about where there's less affluence, where there's less employment, where all of those sociological concepts come into play when you evaluate what racism is. So I'm with Barbara without question, and you, Mike, on this idea of police officers doing these terrible things. But I'm still thinking that's you look at Pittsfield, you look at Albany, you look at all these places. This is really a terrible outbreak of violence, and I think you want to talk racism, it's there too.
Well, I guess what I'd like to say, and this is wearing my former City Council of Albany member hat, I was vice chair of our Public Safety Committee when I was on the Common Council, and then I was chair of the Common Council. So I was really immersed in law enforcement and criminal justice and police issues, and I really got to learn what the police department's job was in a way that you can't get it if you're not either a part of a family or doing research on what does a police officer have to do. One of the things that I learned is that most people living in the kind of communities that you're describing really want a high level of police support.
Yeah.
That they are not anti-policing when it comes to having a better quality of life and better level of safety. What they also, of course, do not wish is to be treated disrespectfully and insultingly. So those things can coexist. Community policing has been the philosophy of the Albany Police Department for quite a few years. It was on my watch that came in, and I'm not taking responsibility. It was a community effort. It was a departmental commitment. It was community crying out for, we need to change how we do policing in Albany. And, of course, the Common Council was instrumental in helping to push that forward. So we haven't had the level of violent crimes here in Albany, particularly in the summertime. Recently, we also have Cure Violence and our ceasefire model program, which I was also very involved in. So the thing is that we see that it can be both and. It doesn't have to be, you know, hostility toward the police and crime running rampant. You can actually have a cooperative experience.
You are not wearing it today. Normally, when you come in, you have a pin on that says "Stop the Violence."
Yes.
How do you define violence, and what ultimately are you looking to stop?
Well, with that button, which does say "Stop the Violence," and that did come from our SNUG, which is gun spell backward, that does come from our SNUG program, which is still very much active. It now uses the name Cure Violence. So it's SNUG Cure Violence. It used to be Ceasefire, and Ceasefire comes out of Chicago. It's a violence interruption mode where people who have credibility because of their past of being involved in violent and other kinds of negative activity, they've transformed their lives, often after doing time in prison. They come back and they give back to the community by communicating in only the way they can with those who are likely to do violence. So that button, as I say, came from SNUG, but every single day it's something. You know, whether it's the shootings at in France, you know, because of the magazine.
Trial
and Hambo. Yes. every single day there's something that that button applies to. So I really like wearing the button because the people who see it, they can interpret it as they wish. And it's not always about gun violence. It's about, for me, it's like, I'm against all kinds of violence. I think we agree.
I mean, well, we're in agreement there.
God, yes. We'll talk a lot more about this tomorrow. But final topic for the morning, and that is the president is expected to outline today his thoughts on environmental plan on climate change. The New York Times says today Obama to unveil tougher environmental plan with his legacy in mind. And even as initial details are emerged, there's still controversy.
How can he lose? That's my view of this. Even if the Congress says, no, we're not going to do it. You know, we want to protect the generators of pollution. How does he lose? People say, well, he tried to do the right thing. And they've trotted out already huge numbers of people. I was listening to BBC this morning. I wanted to throw the radio out, out of the car. They're so glib and, about in their denial of the facts that so many scientists believe in. And they come up with this little thing and that little thing. But in the end, you want to yell at the radio, just shut up. This is undeniable. The scientific community is united in this. He's doing the right thing. And as things get worse, he'll get more and more credit, no matter what happens.
Well, Jimmy Carter, during his administration in the late 70s, pushed for solar alternatives to oil and carbon-causing, coal, carbon-causing fuels that generate electricity. And people laughed at him. I don't think people are laughing. I mean, there are people resisting this, no question. I don't think people are laughing at Obama now.
Yeah. Reagan came in and took down the solar panels. Remember that?
Right. Reagan did on the White House. But today, solar panels are going up in all the neighborhoods, and it's becoming a reality. Obama has the momentum behind him. Now, the interesting thing to me is he leaves office in 18 months or so, and this is going to be something, a program that goes through 2030. So if this is going to succeed, whoever goes into the White House is going to have to continue this.
Hillary or Joe Biden?
Or whoever. Marco Rubio, Walker, whoever.
Yeah, that'll happen.
And they'll have an opportunity to derail it. And it's going to be, a pretty hot topic, so to speak, no pun intended. I mean, Mitch McConnell, the leader of the Senate, is already, come out, he's from Kentucky, a coal state, and the coal states are fighting this. They're urging states to ignore this mandate, et cetera.
I say think Jor-El.
Think Jor-El.
Superman, yes.
Father.
Son. We are out of time. Thank you very much for being with us. We, of course, want to thank Mike Spain for being here.
Mike.
Thank you, Mike.
Thank you.
Barbara Smith,
thanks,
always
Bob.
A pleasure. Thank you. Alan, thank you. And we welcome your letters. Roundtable, WAMC.org. We'll be back.